28 Ways to Save the World with Megan Scully. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to 28 Ways to Save the World on News Talk, your practical guide to greener living and the simple steps we can all take to tackle climate change. My name is Megan Scully and this is the final episode of 28 Ways to Save the World. It's been quite a journey we've been on over the past 28 weeks and I've learned so much and made real concrete changes to my own behaviour. But it's also been a lot to take on and I still have some questions. So today we're going to try to hone in on the fundamental lessons you as an individual can take away and enact. What can you do to make a difference? One of the major climate culprits that rears its head over and over again is plastic. It's just everywhere. I've been trying to cut down on my own use and consumption of it, from food packaging to clothing. But in reality, avoiding it completely feels nearly impossible. And when it comes to recycling, there's still a lot of confusion about what actually works. So Will Mitchell from mywaste.ie joins me once again to try to clarify matters. I mean, you're no stranger to the show now, but thank you for coming back again for the finale.
Thank you so much for having me back. It's great to be here.
I have to say, I have taken so much information from each time that you've been on 28 Ways. And I have to say, I've noticed I've made some changes at home when it comes to plastic and trying to maybe pare back in it. Like little things like I try now to make sure that I put my food into a proper bowl instead of putting it into the plastic container in the microwave. I'm hand washing my lunch boxes now instead of just throwing them in the dishwasher. So it's just, it's funny when you, I think you're made aware of these things that you kind of actually start to put them into practice.
Yeah, absolutely right. And, you know, that's a lot of what we want to happen is just the awareness to kind of get through to people. People be a bit more conscious of how they're acting. We're not always asking for people to make huge sweeping changes in their lives. That's too much to expect from people and it would be setting people up for failure. So what we want is for people to know the little things that they can do in their lives to both make their lives better and help the environment.
It is though, I suppose, it's literally impossible to avoid plastic though, isn't it? It's just, it's everywhere.
It is everywhere, yeah. And some of it's necessary and some of it isn't. So we need to avoid the plastic that is unnecessary.
Oh, I hate probably asking it, but what I suppose is the necessary plastic? Like what are the ones that we're just going to have to kind of, I guess, live with?
Well, a lot of it is very useful for packaging, preserving foods.
Okay.
So at the moment, a lot of our foods are coming in from overseas and packaging does help preserve them so they arrive in a better state over here. One good way to cut down on that is buying local foods and buying seasonally.
Yeah.
So check what fruit and veg is growing well at the time when you're buying. So Ireland has wonderful raspberries and strawberries and apples and broccolis and all these kind of things that you can buy here.
The one thing though that still kind of gets me, and I have to say, I have been looking at the website, is the recycling and the bin. I find every day I'm reading packaging and I'm like, is this recyclable? Is it not? That's the one that still catches me.
Well, it's great to hear that you're using mywaste.ie. That's exactly what we want. It's a free service. So yeah, if anybody has any questions about what bin to use for any particular bit of packaging or product, stick it into the search bar on mywaste.ie and we'll give you the answer. And if it happens to not be there, drop us a line and we'll let you know.
Okay.
But yeah, the messaging on packaging is difficult because it's for different markets. So not just the Republic of Ireland, it's for the UK or wider Europe, but it all gets sent out the same. So any plastic, as long as it's clean, dry and loose, can go in your recycling bin at home. Same with clean metals, plastics, paper, cardboard, they all go in your home recycling bin.
How clean do they have to be though? Because this is, again, this is another area where I get confused.
So pretty clean.
Okay.
So you give it a rinse out, you give it a little wipe and you drip dry it. Give it a little shake, drip dry it and that's fine. So what you're looking to avoid is making sure that it can't contaminate any other items in the bin.
Okay.
So if there's a teeny tiny crumb in the corner of a pack that you can't get, that's not going to damage the newspaper at the bottom of the bin. If you have a soup pack with some drops in it that might get out and get onto the paper, that's no good because that'll contaminate the paper and the cardboard, which will then no longer be recyclable.
What about pizza boxes? Because we had this discussion recently in my house and we were both looking at it and we ended up tearing up the whole box because we were trying to tear around the like pizza oil stain.
Champions.
Oh, yeah, is that right?
Okay. That's exactly what you're supposed to do. Yeah. So that is maximum value from your pizza box there. So the greasy bit has to go in your brown bin, your composting bin.
Okay,
your
I think this was a debate we had as well. I was like, no, I think that can go into compost.
Yeah, you're dead right. You're flying it through this podcast. And yeah, then because the cardboard has higher value as a recyclable material rather than a compostable one, you should put the clean cardboard from your pizza box into the recycling bin.
What about the food, maybe the ones that are kind of soils that you kind of can't get clean? Is what happened? You just put them in the normal bin?
Compost. Cardboard is compostable.
And what about plastic?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, if you can't get it clean, it just goes in the normal bin. So that'll end up going for incineration, energy recovery.
Okay, because I think what happens in my head, I just imagine that there'd be like this like big, I don't know, dishwasher somewhere where all this recycling goes. And I was like, can I not, like, is that something that can be maybe done down the line where we could just effectively throw all our dirty plastic into the same bin and then there'd be a system that can clean it along the road or further down the road?
Yeah, potentially. It depends a little bit on the costs of the process.
Okay.
So, you know, the plastic that gets recycled, it's essentially sold. So it has a value for a reused material because it's being turned into a product. So it's being used as a material. So if it's worthwhile for them to clean the material to then turn it into something else, well, then that's viable.
Well, I think there's a campaign for that because I was thinking that sometimes it is just a bit handier if you could just throw it in the bin and not have to worry about it. I just, you know, maybe it would make more people recycle better.
Yeah.
More often.
You're getting into technicalities then with messaging because then if everybody's putting dirty things in their bin, then your paper and your cardboard gets contaminated.
Yeah.
So it gets tricky.
Oh, I feel like it's going to come to a point in our lives where we're just going to have like so many bins outside our doors and having to like separate so many different things. But look, I think anything that helps, you know, does make a difference.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And it's one of the kind of questions that we get about the return scheme a lot is like, is it worth it? Is it making a difference? But it is making a difference. Our recycling rates for these bottles have shot up. We're up around 90%. So it is worth it.
Yeah, I find though now sometimes when I'm walking and I see like a crushed can that maybe someone dropped in a car or drove over it, I'm kind of going, that's such a waste of money.
Yeah, it is a waste of money.
It really bothers me.
But if you do see a crushed one, it can still be recycled. You just won't get your 15 cent back for it.
Yeah, so
it can still go into your recycling bin at home.
Okay, so if people spot me walking around the streets picking up crushed cans, you know what I'm doing. I'm trying to save the environment. One thing I want to touch on, which is I guess come up quite a lot, and it's something that I've probably always been aware of, is clothing waste. And I have started Vinted, but the problem is I've started buying on Vinted, not selling, which is, I need to flip that. I need to start selling. But one thing I have noticed, and I just, it kind of baffles me, is the amount of people who are selling the likes of Shein and Temu on these websites, and they're literally selling a dress for €1 or €2. And I know France have brought in laws against the likes of fast fashion and purchasing fast fashion. I do really feel like Ireland needs to do something about it because it is such an issue. And I don't know if people realise how much damage, you know, clothes are making. Not just microplastics getting into our systems, but just, I suppose, having plastic clothes that literally will never, never fade or never disappear.
Yeah, there are a load of issues. You've touched on the microplastics. You're literally wearing plastic, so that's not particularly healthy. They don't feel particularly good to wear. They don't let the skin breathe. They go smelly faster. They stain faster. They don't do well in washes. They get all stretched out of shape in anything over 30 degrees. But there are also the social issues as well. Mm-hmm. People making these cheap clothes are not being paid well either.
I often think when I walk past some of the fast fashion outlets and I look in, I wondered if the window display showed you the people that were making the garments in these factories and in these dire conditions, would you still buy the item of clothing?
Probably not.
That's what you'd hope. But I don't know, it's hard to get the message out there because I still feel like there's this huge push for new, latest trends, fashion. And I guess social media, I think, is a driving force for that because a lot of people are being paid to promote brands. And, and I, you know, I still am getting ads for, I've tried to like block the likes of the AliExpress and the Sheins and the Temus, but I just find they're still throwing up ads left, right and centre at me.
They're spending an enormous amount of money to get through to you.
Okay.
They're making an enormous amount of money. And that's why it's still getting through to you.
Yeah, and I've even noticed now, I've seen, you know, for example, like racing. I've seen like social media accounts, like we'll often, you know, talked, especially mainly females, but men now as well, about their style and their outfits. Like, oh, you know, where's your outfit from? And they're always going, oh my God, it's Shein or it's Temu or it's... And I'm kind of going, maybe we shouldn't be promoting that people are buying these products on our social media because, you know, there's only so many of us can push about what's going on behind the scenes. But it's, we need, I think, the government and the powers that be to get involved.
Yeah, well, I'm delighted to hear you as somebody in the media, a presenter, talking about being conscious about the messages that you're pushing out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you don't want people to buy fast fashion, don't glorify it and say, you bought this from Shein for €2 and you look fantastic. Isn't that brilliant, world? No, that's not what we want to be promoting. Follow them up in a week and see what their outfit looks like then. They're not wearing it again because it doesn't fit them the same.
Yeah, or it's just they only bought it for one wear.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what we need to get away from. And it's a bit of a, it doesn't make sense economically either. So I know that it's difficult to buy quality things all the time because they are more expensive, but they last you 10 years instead of a month or 2 months.
We need to do like a Marie Kondo where we just fall in love with our clothes. I think everything should have a little story to it. And I find that's in my wardrobe. I've kind of, there's certain items I'm like, I know exactly where they came from and they just kind of invoke a certain memory.
Mm.
And then if there's something that maybe has a, not a nice memory attached to it, I will send that to a charity shop and let someone else get a nice memory from it.
Yeah, exactly. And the likes of Vinted make it so much easier for people to buy quality things now.
Yeah.
So if you're seeing that the label is good, you can see what it's made out of. Is it cotton or is it polyester? You opt for the cotton thing and it's going to last you longer.
Will Mitchell, it's been an absolute pleasure. I think you have been on this show the most out of anyone. This is your third and final time here with us because it obviously is the final episode. So thank you so much. I know you do. You win. And I don't know if I ever shared this before, but I think I'm going to share it now. We actually were next door neighbours growing up in Dundrum many, many years ago. And it was so nice to reconnect with an old neighbour. And as I said, we'll be over to visit. Yeah, it's been great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Having tried to shop more sustainably, I found that it's not as simple as it sounds. From reading labels, trying to buy local, it's taking longer, costing more, and even then, the food often isn't as local as expected. So how realistic is sustainable shopping in Ireland right now? Mick Kelly from Grow It Yourself joins me again now on the show. You're very welcome back.
Thanks a million for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing absolutely great. And I have to say, since I first chatted to you and now follow you on social media, I have to say, my shopping has gotten a little bit longer. And I've noticed this because I am constantly checking labels. And I am kind of flabbergasted, to be honest, about how much produce are in our shops and aren't locally sourced.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of like a rabbit hole that you go down, isn't it? Once you become aware of it. I should apologize, first of all, that your shopping is taking you so long. But yeah, it is. I kind of find I'm almost feel like when I'm shopping, I'm kind of triaging through a whole range of different kind of decisions. You know, is it local? Is it organic? Is it wrapped in plastic? It's a very kind of very complex thing shopping these days, unfortunately.
It absolutely is. And you mentioned there, like, I always try to go organic as well. And I don't have the luxury of always being able to get to like a co-op or a local farmer shop, especially when I'm in the city centre. And, you know, sometimes I need to nip into the shop and I try to not bulk buy either because I don't want to have food waste. So a lot of the stuff I do kind of buy on the cuff, but like that. And I have to say, actually, thank you, though, for showing me, because I don't mind spending that bit longer trying to find as local as possible. But is there anything we can do as a consumer? Because I find, you know, as I said, you mentioned the organic section there. I still go over there and I'm still looking at where they're sourced from. And they're traveling, I'd say, for thousands of miles to get to our shops.
Yeah, it's really complex, actually. And, you know, there's no kind of simple answer to it. Like, people have been asking me on kind of social media, you know, which is better, say with carrots, right? If they're like organic from, you know, imported, or if they're local, if they're Irish and not organic. And that's like, that's a really difficult question to answer, to be honest. And I think it's probably one of those questions where it depends, right? So firstly, it depends how far it's traveled. And I think you do need to consider that, because the longer the journey, the more the nutrient density of the produce is affected. That's like scientifically proven. And so, you know, if you've got something that's from Spain, it's not so bad. If it's from like South America or India or whatever, or Africa, it's a different ball game. And I think also, when it comes to sort of organics, like I would always try and default to organic if I can, because I do think it's incredibly important. But then, as you say, if it's organic and it's come all the way from South America, it's not quite as easy as sort of a decision. So I think you're always trying to filter through those kind of different things. My advice would be try and choose organic as much as possible, if not always, because you're avoiding kind of produce that's been treated with pesticides and with chemical inputs used in its production and in its transit. And then, you know, go as local as possible, like ideally in your community or in your country, but at the very least, you know, go with Europe. And if you're not able to afford organic or you can't find organic, then I would say it becomes extra important to choose European produce, because we have protections here around chemical usage and so on in the EU that they don't have in other countries. So for some reason, we allow, you know, imports of produce from countries where they use chemicals that are banned in the EU, for example. And that means you're eating produce that's got potentially chemicals that are really dangerous and that we've banned, you know, in some cases decades ago in the EU. So I think go local, go organic, and but it's a spectrum as opposed to a binary choice often.
I usually get tomatoes each week and trying to find the as local as possible. And this week, the closest I could get was Belgium. And after that, it was Morocco. And I just was like, I was just really disheartened, to be honest. I kind of left the shop being like, we have to do better.
Yeah, well, look, I'm glad you brought that up, right? Because it does raise a very important point, which is around seasonality, right? So we don't have any Irish tomatoes at the moment.
Okay.
Like full stop. They aren't in season. The Irish tomato season runs from around April. So, you know, a couple of weeks time, we'll probably see Irish tomatoes starting to come again. And it'll finish around December. So like there are a couple of months where we don't have any. That's the reality. And so the question that you have then is, are you going to keep eating tomatoes when we don't have them in season in Ireland, or are you going to switch to something else? And that's a personal choice, right? And there's a very important consideration for us all when we're thinking about trying to eat locally all the time, which is that there's a thing called the hungry gap in Ireland, which happens actually, it's at its most acute in April and May. And it's a gap between, you know, the last of last year's produce being used up. So if you think about it, like say with onions and things, like growers would be harvesting them in August of last year, and then they're storing them over the winter in cold storage, and then they kind of run out, and so they don't have any left. So there's a 2 month gap where there's almost no Irish produce available, and like we have a veg box scheme, organic veg box scheme from our farm. And at this time of the year, particularly for the next 2 months, we have to supplement with imported produce because there's very little Irish produce available, full stop.
Okay.
So I think you have to kind of bear that in mind with your shopping over the next couple of weeks. So the produce is kind of narrowing now. We're down to things like leeks and, you know, there's still potatoes, there's still turnips, there's still some cabbages and things, but it's really narrowing, and it narrows even more going through April and May. And then the new season produce starts to come in June and gets really abundant by around the middle of June. And you can eat, you know, Irish produce then all the way until next February.
Right, leek and potato soup, so for the next few weeks. That's what I'm getting from this, Mick. And another thing I want to mention is, because it's kind of another thing that's really frustrating me, is when it comes to garlic, because I've noticed we are selling a lot of garlic from China in our supermarkets.
Yeah, and that's pure price. Like, it was actually garlic from China that started me on my growing journey back nearly 20 years ago. That I got frustrated with that. So, but yeah, like it's the vast majority of garlic that we sell in supermarkets is from China. We've only a handful of garlic growers in Ireland. I'd say probably one or two that are selling, that are doing it, and they're not big. So very little Irish garlic, but you will find Spanish garlic. And certainly in our shop here in Grow HQ, we sell Spanish organic garlic. And, you know, I would say if you find it, like, stock up on it, because it does keep quite well, you know. So you could buy 15, 20 bulbs of it and hang them up in a net in your kitchen or whatever, and they'll last for a good while. So definitely, if you find Irish garlic in season later in the year, like September, October, certainly stock up and buy it, because it's worth supporting and a fantastic produce. And the stuff from China is always sprayed with sulfites and other preservatives to stop it from sprouting in transit. So you want to avoid that at all costs.
Oh my God. And I do love garlic, so I will be sticking to the EU one until our Irish one is back in. Another thing that I really enjoy in your social media, and because I guess it's something that happens to me almost every single week, is the snake lines in petrol stations. I'm on the road an awful lot with work, driving across the country, and sometimes my only option is I suppose a petrol station to get a quick bite to eat. And I find time is always against me. So I know it's easy enough to say, oh, just do meal prep. But it that just doesn't always happen for me. And I find I'm in the supermarket, and again, I'm trying to find something that I can take with me in the car that I know I can, you know, get a bit of nutrients into myself and also feed myself. But it is difficult, because you do walk in and you see all these colours, and it just, you know, it just kind of screams, I suppose, fast food and sugar and all the things we probably don't want to be having on the daily.
Yeah. Listen, you're kind of poking the bear here. I get so angry about these convenience kind of petrol stations, and particularly the ones on our motorway network are actually a public good, and they're given, we give licenses, like we own the motorways.
Yeah.
And we give licenses to these companies, and we're allowing them just to sell, as you say, like they're just wall to wall ultra processed foods. And I'm not afraid to call out Circle K are the worst of all. Like they are just gone over to the dark side, massive Canadian company. Obviously, they've brought in some of the big sort of American fast food outlets as well. And, you know, almost a complete absence of anything that's food. And like, I just think, and people say, well, sure, look, it's your choice. Don't go in there if you don't want to. But actually, when you're driving, you need to stop, or you need to stop to go to the loo, or you need to stop to take a break or whatever. And I think that they should be viewed as public facilities, and they should be forced to you know, at least have some healthy food options there. And to say it's free choice ignores the billions that these companies spend on advertising and then designing and engineering the food to be ultra addictive and to be, you know, hyper palatable. And it's I just think it's outrageous. And I know I've posted before, they have like a Circle K right beside the till. They have a kid zone, like, and it's actually labeled a kid zone, and like it's from the floor up to sort of a head height of the worst type of ultra processed foods. Like, I just think it's outrageous that they're allowed to do that in what should be considered a public amenity, and that, you know, government has to step in and regulate these places and stop them from doing this. Like, it's we're building up an absolute, you know, disaster for the wellness of people. And I just think it's desperate that they're allowed to get away with that.
Completely agree with you. And I just think, you know, if there were those like healthy options, I think we'd all be going for them, because it's just a great way. I find if I'm driving, if I can eat a bit of fruit, I'm getting my fruit into me. And it's just kind of, I think, almost a kind of a handy way to be hitting those targets and to be getting more fruit and veg into us. And I actually was saying it to Aidan earlier that, you know, if there was even a section in these stores along these motorways that just had, I don't know, an all Irish section, I would pay more, even though I know we shouldn't have to pay a premium, but I would pay because it technically is a premium product, because we grow such good veg in this country.
Yeah. Well, I think Doreen Allen maybe coined this phrase. I've certainly heard her use it, where she says you either pay the farmer or you pay the pharmacist or the doctor down the line, you know. And I think that's a really good way to think about it, that like they're, you know, people give out about the price of organic food, and I get it, like we're all, you know, on tight budgets, but like it all comes down to choice at the end of the day. And I think we actually do need to be really brutally honest with ourselves about the choices that we're making and what we're spending our money on. And like, if you're complaining that an organic cauliflower is 50 cent more expensive than a regular cauliflower or whatever, I think you're barking up the wrong tree. And like, we have to be honest, like, what did you spend on your last latte in a you know, takeaway, or what did you spend on your last espresso martini or whatever. Like, I do think we need to be brutally honest with ourselves about what we're spending our money on and prioritize, you know, putting really good whole foods into our body. And there's always a cost to real food at somewhere, you know, either for farmers going out of business or, you know, the impact that it has on our health and so on. So I think we have to be honest and realize these are choices that we're making. And so I think it's worth, if there is a small premium, and I think it is a small premium, yep, you know, I think that that's one that's worth paying.
And I think as well, you know, another quote that I always go by is, you know, keep your business in town, keep your town in business. You know, we only saw there, yeah, it was last week that a carrot producer in Kilkenny is having to shut its doors. And then we only saw just the other day how Lidl are announcing price cuts on milk and butter. I mean, these are like the kind of staples in any Irish home. And I know it's kind of, you know, for the organic producers and probably the independent producers and growers such as yourself, like this isn't helping at all. This is in fact probably adding to the crisis.
Yeah, well, like ironically, actually outside our gate here at Grow HQ, which is our urban farm in Waterford, there's a bus shelter, and Lidl have an ad on the bus shelter at the moment. And I wonder about whether that's a coincidence or not, but there's a picture of a carrot grower from Wexford, I think, holding up a bunch of carrots, and it says, you know, it celebrates these carrots are now €1.29, and at the same time, as you say, carrot growers going out of business, and like we have to join the dots about those things. Like there's no question that aggressive price promotions from supermarkets are forcing growers out of business. I've heard just this week from a grower saying there's another two veg growers he's aware of are going to pull out this year and not grow any veg. So like if we keep going down this route, we're not going to have any growers left. All we can do, I think, as consumers is like get out there and support local growers directly, I would say, yeah, because I fundamentally, until the agri-food regulator steps in and actually prevents supermarkets from doing this, I just think the supermarket system is broken. They've no interest in supporting growers, really. And so I think you have to consider buying direct if you can. I have a vested interest in saying this, in that we've got an organic veg box scheme, but we're not the only one. And I think there's veg box schemes out there. The way couriers are now, you can get them delivered. You can get fresh produce delivered to your door, and I think that's a way to support small scale local growers, often organic, you know, directly. And I think that's a really viable alternative to that system that I think is just fundamentally rotten, you know.
McKelly from Grow It Yourself, I completely agree with you, and I've loved chatting to you, and I really thoroughly enjoy following you across social media, because I have to say you've really, I suppose, made me think twice. And as I said, you've added time to my shopping, but that is a good thing because it means I'm making better choices, and I hope others follow suit as well. But thank you so much for giving us the time on the show, and thank you for being part of 28 Ways to Save the World, not once but twice.
Thanks a million. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Over the course of this series, we've talked about sustainability in the context of a number of celebrations, from birthdays to weddings to Christmas and Halloween, and it's clear that events can present a certain challenge. So in general, how can we celebrate without the environmental cost? Sharon Keelty, one of our favourite sustainability experts and friends of the show, joins me now. You're very welcome.
Hi, Megan. Lovely to see you again.
I know, and it's great to have you in studio with us. And yeah, thank you so much for coming back for the final episode.
I'm delighted and congratulations. It's been such an amazing run of podcasts, and you've done so much good inspiring people to just try that one next thing that they haven't done before to live a bit more sustainably. So well done.
Thank you. I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and it's just been, it's just been great fun as well, which I think is really important when it comes to sustainability. And speaking of fun, we think of events such as birthdays, Christmas, weddings, you know, they're all celebrations. They're all really, really good fun. And, you know, hen parties, I'm currently organising one myself. I can't give away too many details now because she hasn't a clue what's going on. But I am kind of conscious of trying to make it, I guess, a greener hen if I can. But I suppose when it comes to the environmental costs, like maybe what are the kind of top tips that people can bring going forward? As I said, with the hen, I'm trying to think less plastic is obviously one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, so let's think about events, right? It could be a hen, it could be a wedding, it could be a christening, it could be anything that's going on for people's lives. My big message about events is this is a joyful, celebration, you know, so let's not suck any joy out of it. If it's your hen or your wedding or your friend's hen, and you know, that's the main purpose, right, is to create one memorable day that will never happen again. Mm-hmm. So give yourself some free passes. And I know that seems a bit counterintuitive, but that's my headline message on events is it's got to be joy first. But then there are some like big things that you can do that won't hurt too much. And it's actually a bit counterintuitive what they are. So the biggest impact of events is actually the travel,
mm-hmm.
and the food.
Oh, yes.
And the plastic and the stuff and everything is important, and it's visible, and it's messaging, it's culture, you know. So it is good to be mindful of those things. But actually, so if you can, instead of going abroad for a hen, if you can have it in Ireland. Now, if it'll ruin the hen to have it here and you really need to go abroad, like, you know, it's a once in a lifetime thing. But if you can have it local, that's a big impact. If you can carpool, if you can rent a minibus, which I think you're thinking of doing, that has a huge impact on the environmental footprint of the whole event, which I know is not the first thing that we would think of, right? The second thing is the food. And again, it's got to be memorable, enjoyable. But at the same time, like beef or salmon, it's got a bit boring, right? So the big thing that you can do with food is to avoid the beef. Beef is the biggest contributor, even if it's Irish, organic, local. You know, if you're going to do beef, go Irish local organic. But if you can go Irish local organic, something else.
Yeah.
You know, beef is also not good for our health, but it has the biggest environmental impact by a factor of 10 compared to something that was plant-based, but also by a big factor compared to other meats like chicken. So if you really want meat, then try and go for like chicken or fish. And maybe you don't need meat in every course. Maybe you don't need meat at lunch. Maybe you could just have an amazing, memorable vegetarian. We don't even have to go vegan here, right?
Yeah.
Maybe like go to a really fancy restaurant. There are some lovely, really fancy vegetarian and vegan restaurants around that cater for events, or that you might choose for your hen lunch or whatever. So that's the second biggest thing. And ideally, a successful vegetarian, you know, lunch, nobody would miss the meat. They would just be talking about, wow, that was so interesting. It was so tasty. I had never tried that before. So, you know, go for pizzazz and quietly drop the meat, or at least drop the beef if you can. That's it. So those are the two big things, is the travel and the food.
Interesting.
So, but let's talk about the stuff as well. Like, do you have any thoughts about your hen in terms of the stuff?
Yeah, well, I think I've noticed, I suppose, a lot with the hen parties and weddings is a lot of, I guess nowadays, the personalised signage and the personal items maybe on the table at the wedding, or perhaps, you know, the kind of, I guess, posters that have been made up now. And I know a lot of them are probably ordered online and made of plastic. And I find sometimes, I've noticed now, and it's probably since I've been recording this series, but also probably just kind of previously, is all the plastic waste. And I find, you know, if you go to a hen party and the sign says, I'm going to use my own name, it's like Megan's hen party, that can never be really used again. So it's kind of like, where does that go afterwards? And I'm kind of thinking, is there a way that we can get signage or personalised items that are longer lasting, that maybe the bride and groom or perhaps the hen goers can actually reuse again? I know sometimes you see at weddings, people give gifts and they might have the bride and groom's name on them, or the bride and the groom and groom. But then I'm kind of thinking, if that person takes that home, will they want to use it again because it's someone else's name? And is there a use that they can have for it? So that's kind of what I've tried to be thinking about lately, is like, how can I still create something special for a friend, but know that it's not creating waste, but like that without telling everyone, oh, by the way, guess what? This is really sustainable hen party. But I just kind of was like, can I do it subtly and secretly that I know, and that, you know, they can all just have a great time and not have to think about it?
Yeah, totally. And, you know, this is where the kind of the joy versus the cost of it comes in. And I totally agree with you. You don't want to be shoving it down their throats. That it wants to be quietly, elegantly eco. Let's
Absolutely.
Call it. So, you know, there are lovely alternatives to physical favours. Like, imagine going to a wedding or an event and having a little card on your place that said, we've planted a tree for you.
Mm-hmm. Love
that. Doesn't that just give you a tingle? Like, and there are gorgeous options for that. Reforest Nation is an Irish social enterprise that plants trees, and they have a lovely option to plant an Irish forest of native Irish trees, 100 trees, for only $3.99 a tree.
That's...
So you could get some plastic tat off, you know, let's not name them, but big, you know, international e-commerce website, or you could plant a native Irish tree and leave something that is not going to gather dust in my home and is not going to sit there and annoy me because I can't really recycle it because it's got someone's name on it. You know, like you're not giving people clutter because everyone's got enough stuff. You know, we're in the great privileged position in Ireland that most people have enough stuff. So not only is it creating waste, but also, you know, it's maybe it's a nice memorabilia or maybe it's actually something that sits in my home and I'm like, oh. So, you know, a little card that says you planted a tree for me or something. Or you can give people some like native Irish seeds.
Yes.
Connecting for Nature's lovely website. They grow their seeds organically in Waterford and harvest them. And so you can give them, you can give people a little pack and they'll do customized cards. And here's the thing, paper is not the enemy, right? So you could get a little card with a little seed pack inside that said, you know, Mary and John's wedding and have it customized from Connecting to Nature and they'll do all of that for you. The other option is like a card that says we've donated to Barnardo's or another charity for you, which I also think would be really lovely. Like if you want to do the tat, if you want like the, I won't say the word, but the pink plastic, whatever, you know, for the bridal party or for the hen party, like do it and just forget about it. Like I don't think there is a sustainable option for some of that, you know, the pink feather boas or whatever you want to do. If you can get them secondhand, go to the charity shops for that stuff. You can ask on your local's free cycle group as well. So free cycle groups, you don't just have to offer stuff. You can also make requests. So I just adopted a dog.
Oh, congrats. You know,
and, you know, my first time owning a dog, you need a lot of stuff. I put an ask on the free recycle group and people gave me loads of stuff that they weren't using.
Brilliant. There's
probably a lot of pink feather boas gathering dust in people's attics and they would only love you to put them to good use in your hen party. So free cycle is a great option. And yeah, and then, yeah, even if you do buy a load of stuff that you is sort of for one use only, then offer it on the free cycle group. I've seen customized stuff go on my free cycle group. Someone had a little T-shirt that said, happy first communion day. And it had a child's name, a first name. I think it was John on the T-shirt. And I saw it posted and they said, listen, I know the chances of this going is fairly low. It even had a date on it. First communion, May 2023, John.
Okay.
What are the chances? And someone snapped it up. They said, actually, my nephew John is making his first communion this month as well.
Brilliant.
So you'd be shocked what can go on a free cycle group.
Okay, that's really interesting. And I actually just got a reminder there. At the start of this series, I was speaking at a circular economy event in the RDS and the lanyard was that seeded paper that you said. And it was like, take this home with you and plant it. And I was going, that is so clever. And like I've noticed between that event and pretty much all the events that I either attend or MC at or speak at, they ask for the kind of the string, the lanyard string back so they can reuse it. And I was like, I think a lot, I've noticed, I feel like sometimes the bigger the event, the kind of bigger the practices they're really putting in place, or sometimes it's the little things like that that I'm kind of going, oh, very clever, which kind of moves me on, I guess, to the big events. I was at Cheltenham recently and I met this company that are making these I could have the materials wrong now, but like an aluminium reusable cup. So brands then can obviously put their own label on it, but it's dishwasher safe. So obviously we go to big, large scale events and a huge issue I always notice is the plastic cups.
Yes.
And this they are single use. Like, and I know some places are trying to bring in the multi-use ones, but still I think they do garner quite a lot of waste, whereas these cups are kind of seem like a bit of a better answer to the plastic. And as I said, they're washable and reusable. And then you see they're kind of, I suppose if you want to take them home, you have like a cup you can reuse.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, we've always had this to an extent with the Venn tire companies. There's always, you know, like you say, when you go to bigger scale, the solutions are often there. It's the mid and smaller scale that there maybe wasn't a solution. I remember looking into that when I was starting what became Party Kit Network in Ireland, where you can borrow a party kit for your child's party.
Brilliant.
But wouldn't it be cool if we had hen party kits?
Yeah.
And you could go borrow it, although I'm not sure if people would want to back after the wild night. But one other thing I spotted, Megan, just to put in your head was venues. So if you were thinking of like a hotel for an event or a nice restaurant, or even if you wanted to go away for the weekend for your hen party to find a nice place for you guys to stay, there are eco ratings for hotels and venues. If you have a look at, so there's a new website that's been started up. It's not fully populated yet, but it looks like it's going to be really good, called greentravel.ie. This is all full to Ireland now, helping Irish venues to improve sustainability on site. Things like, you know, not washing the towels unnecessarily, not having single use little plastic bottles, but also like getting solar panels and, you know, having chargers for electric vehicles. And it's a really good program. So venues can get accredited and then they get listed on this website, greentravel.ie. But I also had a look at Ireland.com that had a lovely article of listing more eco venues around the country that ranged from little like Airbnb style, like with the jacuzzi kind of places, which I was thinking of you with your hen weekend, to, you know, to big hotels. So just a little bit of effort. It's nice to reward the venues that are making an effort, you know,
absolutely,
even if they're all doing it imperfectly and they still have ways to go. So good to spend your money with the ones that are trying.
Yeah, because I even find those little mini bottles, I know they are such a waste, but what I kind of do is I tend to, if I use a body lotion one, for example, I might only be using it there for one night. So I'll take it with me and I have one sitting in my car because I love hand cream. I just love putting on, something I just do. So I have a little bottle in my car and then I always have one in either my handbag or, so I try to just, until I use it up. And then I find they actually are quite handy then to refill, especially like the shampoo and conditioner ones. Mm. So I do take them with me because I'm trying to get as much use out of it as possible. So I'd say sometimes people see my like toiletries bag and like, why is there like little hotel bottles here? But I'm like, because otherwise I don't want them just to be thrown away and, you know, single use. So I'm trying my best to reuse them as much as I can.
That's great. Go for it. And my little drawer in my bathroom is full of hotel soaps that I put back in the cardboard box and brought home, even the cardboard box was damp, you know. It's fine. It all dries out in the end. But one other thing that might be relevant to your hen and even when you're talking to the bride is about flowers.
Ah.
So there are beautiful local flower growers in Ireland. Okay, it's not our big industry, but there are some. I found a few names, Ruth Fortune and Hove Hill Farm in West Cork, for example.
Oh, lovely.
A spot online that grow local flowers and they do flowers for events. So wouldn't that be gorgeous to have your bouquet on the day, you know, for the bride to be like local native Irish flowers that were grown by someone with a name that we can relate to and not flown in from Brazil, because, you know, a lot of flowers do.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Are, you know, they're like, I don't want to guilt anyone now who wants the flowers, but like, you know, loads of chemicals used to grow them. And then the only way to get a flower here intact is to fly it from, if it comes from far away. So the kind of like very fancy looking flowers can be actually quite a big environmental burden, whereas there's beautiful native flowers here and it would just be more meaningful as well. So that was an idea. And you can also get dried flowers, and there's a couple of sort of artisan. There was a lady who used to sell at events beside me when I was running my toy store, that she would do wreaths and bouquets of dried flowers. They were beautiful, and then they'll last.
Yeah.
You take them home, put them on the door, or and you could keep your bouquet for years. So.
No, there's such lovely ideas. Actually, my mother and stepfather got married at the start of the month, and she went to the local florist about 5 minutes down the road and just said, I want local, and a colourful and native. And we got the most gorgeous bouquet. It's funny, everyone said it to me. Everyone's like, where did you get the flowers? And I said, literally down the road from a local florist. And now she has them drying out in the shed, I think. So, she, you know, she wants to hold on to them. But it was just, they were so lovely and they were just like all mixture of colours and really, really pretty. And they really popped in the photos then as well. So I think that's why everyone is like, where did she get them? And I was like, down the road. Literally down the road.
I love that story because it just captures something that I'm always pushing for people to do, is it can't hurt to ask. So you're talking to the venue, you're talking to the restaurant, like, could we have at least a vegetarian option on the menu? Or just to ask them, like, what are your most eco-friendly options? Or can you give me an amazing vegetarian menu option? Or and their answer might be, I'm sorry, what? In which case, you're the first person who asked them. At least you've planted the seed in their head. Or they might actually surprise you with how experienced they are at meeting this kind of request. So don't be afraid to ask. Like you said, your mom went to her local flower shop and just asked them for, could I have local in-season flowers or whatever, and she got them. That's fantastic.
And they just worked out so well. I could stay talking to you for ages here because there's so much to get through. But I think even there, you've touched on so many like key points that I think will be so great for events going forward and just for people to think about and maybe producing less plastic. I love the idea of planting the trees. I have to say, I think that is, I'm kind of going, God, I wouldn't mind having been able to tell people, that's my forest over there. That's mine. And that's all my friends and my family actually dotted around. So that's just such a clever and just, I think, really, I think it sounds unique, but I think it'll become less unique now because we're talking about it. And I think it's something really special and obviously like everlasting.
Exactly. And actually Reforest Nation does little cards and kind of a plaque as well, so that you have something in your house because your tree will be somewhere, God knows where, but you'll have something to give people and to stick on your wall as well.
Oh, love it. Sharon Keelty, thank you so much for joining me in studio for the final episode of 28 Ways to Save the World. It's been great to get to know you and to connect with you and to see all the work you're doing, and long may it last.
Thanks, Megan. Well done.
So we've talked about the behaviours we can engage in to try to make an impact as an individual. But of course, we are a communal species and we can't solve these problems alone. So how do we go about having a wider impact? With our money, with our actions and our vote, can we make a difference in the fight against climate change? Environmental journalist John Gibbons, it's great to have you back in for the finale. I mean, here we are, week 28, and I think it's been such a learning curve for me as well. So thank you so much for coming back in.
Delighted to be here.
Now, the last time we did speak, of course, around aviation. So, I mean, where are we now? It was only a couple of months ago we spoke, and then I just saw an article recently about obviously Dublin getting its expansion. It's looking for funding. It's talking about raising costs to cover this funding.
Yeah, I mean, aviation is probably one of the fastest growing sources of carbon emissions worldwide. And Ireland is certainly punching way above its weight in that regard. If you think about the so-called old limit of Dublin Airport, that was 35 million passenger movements through one airport for an island with a population of just over 5 million. It's kind of mind-boggling. And the idea that somehow was inadequate and is holding us back, this whole narrative has been pushed time and time again. We need more, we need more, we need more. The problem, of course, is that we're already using far and above our fair share of the global aviation carbon budget. And what we're seeing here really is just naked self-interest on the part, obviously, of the airlines and, of course, by organisations like DAA and some very, very a huge absence of political leadership here as well. No politicians prepared to say to them, guys, we have to operate within limits. And the other thing to say, if I might, about this is, given the latest energy crisis that we find ourselves facing into, I mean, a scandalous misappropriation of scarce fuels to be burning them up in aviation, much of which is discretionary and an awful lot of which we could well manage without.
I guess you mentioned fuel there. Like, we've obviously seen that the petrol stations and the diesel and fuel has just gone extortionate all of a sudden, and it doesn't seem that it's going to slow down anytime soon. What will that mean then for aviation, though? Because obviously, does that mean then like that just everything's going to go up, the cost of flights, seats, everything?
Well, it should do. The big issue with aviation at the moment, of course, isn't that it's too expensive, it's that it's far too cheap. And the reason for that, of course, is that aviation gets a free ride on excise duties, on VAT, even things like airline tickets for no particular reason are VAT free, right? Everything else you pay VAT on. You pay VAT on so many essential goods, but yet aviation gets this magic, this free pass. And that's why it's possible to have ludicrous anomalies where it might cost you more to get the train from Dublin to Kerry than it does to get a flight from Dublin to Malaga. So that indicates really where we're not applying taxation to sort of manage limited resources. And I think to your question, yes, we're going to see the cost of aviation rise despite that, because, of course, fuel costs are rising worldwide. And given the absolute mess that we're in now in the Middle East, there's probably no easy or quick way out of this. And particularly if the Americans go on to, as they're threatening, and the Israelis, to destroy infrastructure. They're now threatening to destroy Iranian energy infrastructure. If they do that, of course, Iran will respond and retaliate. And we could end up with a situation where there will be chronic oil shortages and gas shortages, not for months to come, but for years to come. And I suppose I have mixed feelings about that. Obviously, economically and so on, it's very disruptive. But it may end up being the shock that we need to finally break our dangerous, our deadly addiction to fossil fuels in the first place. Because if we leave all this just for a moment aside, the fact is that we're still burning fossil fuels at record levels, and it is pumping up the ratchet for global temperatures. We're now seeing more and more extreme events. We're facing in likely into an El Nino year in late 2026, but already we're seeing a massive increase in dangerous and hugely destructive climate-fueled weather events. And these are happening, if you like, in parallel with the breakdown of the global system, that the post-war sort of peace is unraveling. So we live in a very, very strange time, very dangerous time.
What can we do then as, I guess, a country and a nation to, you mentioned there, you know, we probably need to switch over faster and get away from the fossil fuels. So what does that look like? What should we all be doing, or what we should be looking for maybe from our government?
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, we need to put the foot down and accelerate towards decarbonisation. What we need in Ireland is to stop being a petrol state, as in our case, depending on petroleum, and to move and pivot decisively to being an electro state. Now, if we were having this conversation 10 years ago, you could well say to me, well, the technology isn't there, it's too expensive. Well, the technology is there. And for example, EVs are now completely cost competitive with their internal combustion equivalents. So if somebody listening to us today is thinking about, you know, changing their car, and if they need to buy a new car, for goodness sakes, make it an electric vehicle. You know, future you will thank you, I promise you. That's number one. If we moved our entire fleet of private vehicles over to electrification, that would have a huge impact on our importing of these fuels. Because right now, Ireland, Irish people are spending about 5 billion euros a year in imported fossil fuels. And apart from that huge drain on our resources, that money leaves Ireland and it never comes back. But it's also funding some of the worst regimes in the world, whether it's the Russians or the Americans. That money is going to help fund their wars. So that's a double reason to move away from that. And it is important to say that, like, when you're importing oil or importing gas, that is a dangerous consumable product and you never stop needing it, right? Yeah. You bring in a tanker full of it, you burn it, you bring another tanker. You're like an addict. You're depending on your next dose. However, you take the equivalent of a sort of an ocean-going tanker full to the gills with solar panels. That will replace, over the lifetime of those solar panels, the equivalent of between 50 and 100 tankers of oil. So that's the decisive shift that we need. And solar panels, for example, are now, it's reckoned that solar electricity is the cheapest form of electricity in human history. So what does the government do? We need to stop throwing money at subsidising fossil fuels and take that money and push it into making, for example, solar panels, I would suggest, free. I think every citizen in Ireland who has a place to put solar panels, we should give them to them free.
Yeah.
And loan them forward, right? You could even have a thing where they're completely free and maybe there'd be a small charge on your ESB bill to help cover the cost. But to you as the end user, there would be no impact at all because your bills are coming down. And once you're into that electrification, then it makes more sense, for example, to move quickly and decisively towards heat pumps, because heat pumps mean you can electrify our heating system. There has been some pushback, as I'm sure you've heard recently, against retrofitting. Oh, it's too expensive. It's too this, it's too that. I think they're missing the point completely. That is taking an economist sort of one-eyed view of the world. Retrofitting, we have about 1 million homes in Ireland that are badly built that need to be upgraded. Mm-hmm. If we retrofit those, apart from the human health benefit, apart from the comfort benefit, you're also reducing the need to be pumping in huge amounts of fossil fuels. About 700,000 Irish homes are currently heated by heating oil, either kerosene or diesel. Now, that is, again, a huge cost to those people. It's a dirty, filthy fuels, and helping people to move across. And we do that by getting the economic signals right. And by the way, subsidizing fossil fuels, making oil cheaper, unfortunately, is postponing the day. It's giving people the idea, oh, we can hang on, the government will fix this. The government can't fix this. We need to transition.
The thing with the retrofitting, and I know what you're saying, is people are talking about the cost, but I think there's a lot of us in Ireland maybe that don't maybe qualify for the retrofitting system that has been granted to some estates in some areas. And then there's probably people who can afford it, but there's that kind of middle ground of, I think, quite a lot of people now in Ireland who are just pretty much on the breadline, but don't qualify for the grants, don't have the cash in the bank.
Absolutely. Now, creative finance is the solution to this. Let's just say, for argument's sake, you own your home or you have a mortgage, right? And you want to retrofit. That retrofit, when it's put in place, will benefit not just you in your lifetime, but it will benefit everyone who lives in that house for the next 50 to 100 years. Therefore, we should match the funding. You shouldn't take the hit.
Yeah.
If you go out now, and you shouldn't be kind of crippled for the next 5 or 10 years in paying for a benefit to that home for the next 100 years. So what you do instead is we develop a type of financing where, again, the government pays for all of the retrofit. They then make an attachment to the to your deed or to your mortgage. So you make a small, modest annual payment or monthly payment, way below the level of a loan of a loan that you had to borrow that money. Ideally, zero interest. And by the way, you might ask, where's all this money coming from? There's about 150 billion euros in Irish savings. We have government bonds. There are plenty, and we have access to European funding. There is plenty of funding streams to do this.
Okay.
And the government essentially would be loaning you your own money so that we can achieve objectives of national reduction. And that type of thinking, by the way, makes sense. That will help us to bend the curve. The problem at the moment is when we hit an oil crisis, the politicians are running around saying, quick, cut oil prices. That means all you're doing is embedding a long-term dependence on fuels that we know from science we've got to get away from anyway. So we may as well start now.
How far are we off, though, the government doing that for us?
A long way.
Okay.
Again, unfortunately, the current government seems... there's very little indication that there is any true sense of them understanding the crisis that we're in. And I would see, for example, I think we have a twin-headed crisis heading our way in Ireland. Well, we've got lots of them, but two in particular. Obviously, the energy crisis that we can all understand. But for example, we're also facing into a fertilizer crisis. Ireland imports on average about 1 million tons of fertilizer a year. It's a colossal amount of fertilizer. That's roughly a billion euros worth of fertilizer from lovely regimes like Russia, huge, huge fertilizer exporters. So fertilizer, by the way, for those who are not familiar with it, nitrogen fertilizer is essentially a petrochemical. Mm-hmm. It is the product of intense petrochemical processing. So when you're putting that fertilizer on the land to make the grass grow, it's practically like you're spreading oil, right? So you're using massive petrochemical calories to grow grass. Ridiculous system. And unfortunately, in Ireland, we're highly dependent on it because we have such a limited organic sector. And that's part of it. And the reason I bring up nitrogen is that, again, about a third of the world's nitrogen is going through the Straits of Hormuz, or today is not going through the Straits of Hormuz. Okay. We're in the growing season. Around the world, we're going to have a nitrogen crisis probably this year. Nitrogen crisis means a food crisis. So we're probably facing into, maybe not immediately, but certainly in the next 5 years, into deepening food crisis. We're seeing some of the bread baskets and food baskets, for example, in southern Spain and Morocco, where so much of the fruit and vegetables that we eat in Ireland every day, they're being destroyed by extreme weather. So, and yet in Ireland, we're incredibly dependent, believe it or not, for the so-called food island. We import about 83% of everything that we eat. And it's one of the things I address in my book on this, is the idea that we need to make national food security an emergency issue. But I'm seeing no indication that the current administration is on that page at all.
Just listening to you now, it's bringing me back to the episode we had a couple of weeks ago, where I went out to Cape Clear off West Cork, and it was so interesting to see what that community are doing. I was on the organic farm and I learned all about the practices, and it is such a pity that we can't have more organic farms in Ireland, and kind of, I guess, maybe the government helped them out to achieve full organic, because that's the kind of food we want. And also, they are creating their own gas using the food waste. And like the people in the locality, you can just go down and get your canister of gas to use to cook your food. And I found it really like incredible to see what this community are doing. And you know, that should probably be standard all around the island if there was a support there for everyone.
Absolutely. I mean, I think biogas has a local limited role. I wouldn't be a big fan of it on a national scale, but it does have a local limited role. But the type of farming that I'd love to see more of in Ireland is solar farming. Again, we need lots of energy. And think about all farming is extracting energy from the land, whether it's kilowatts or kilocalories. That's what farming does. And ideally, it extracts it in a renewable way. Mm-hmm. So solar farming, and we know, for example, that our own national targets for solar are to achieve about 8 gigawatts of solar by about 2030. And for people to understand what we mean by 8 gigawatts, that's at peak, by the way, that's about the equivalent of 9 Money Point gas-fired power stations. So it's a massive amount of electricity. We can achieve that. If we achieve that by 2030, in case people think this will ruin rural Ireland, that would require 0.25% of the farmland of Ireland to achieve 8 gigawatts of energy. So it's similar to the amount of space currently taken up by golf clubs. So I think solar energy like that can exist alongside traditional farming and should be complementary. I mean, if I was a farmer today, I promise you, some of my land would be farmed solar.
Okay, because I actually drove out to Fairy House there recently, and I would have gone through the Dublin port and up north, and I actually passed a huge solar farm, which I've seen before, but I actually, this one I hadn't, and it kind of caught my eye and I thought, oh wow. But is it as easy as, like, we'll say a farmer going, do you know what, there's actually that field there now that isn't doing much for me. Is it as easy as going, I'm going to just turn that into a solar farm? Or what? Like, what's that process like? Because in theory, I'm like, this is a great idea. Why don't we all do it? Why don't we all, like, give up a bit of a few acres here and there? But I assume it's not that accessible, is it?
Not quite. There's two types of solar that a farmer might undertake. One is someone like Michael O'Leary, by the way, of course, he's also a farmer. He got a lot of government grants, and he installed, I think, about a 96 kilowatt array on his farm up in Westmeath. Now, he's really producing mostly for his own use, right?
Okay.
With a small export. Now, the difference with a commercial solar farm is where you maybe take 100 hectares and you cover it in solar panels. Now, that requires connection to the grid. So that's the big issue in Ireland with getting electrification up to speed, is our grid's ability to take it. And of course, our grid has been compromised hugely over the last 10 years by the sudden influx of massive data centers who are now using more than a fifth of our total national electricity. And the reason, by the way, why our renewable electricity, which has peaked at about 40%, we could easily be at 60% in Ireland renewable electricity. But the data centers have gobbled it up, and the politicians have gone along with it, presumably kowtowing to the tech bros and the multinationals who are driving this insatiable demand. And there is no limit, by the way, to how many of these these data centres that these organisations will push on us if we're prepared to take them. And they're literally taking the electricity out of our grid.
Our episode last week was all about AI, and we actually discussed that as well, and the water waste and the environmental impact. But John, I'm just listening to you here now. So for example, I know there's a lot of people in the same situation as I am right now. I'm mid-30s, single, can't get a mortgage. Certainly if I do get one, I don't think I'll be able to afford anything anytime soon on my own. But if I was to have a bit of savings, could I, in theory, buy a bit of land, maybe a land that can't have a house on it, and could I possibly set up a solar farm?
Again, probably not.
Okay.
Quite honestly, because it would depend on a grid connection.
Right.
You'd probably also, they are quite capital intensive, right?
Okay.
So the establishment of them, they're normally done by companies that specialise in it. It's a lovely idea, and I kind of half fancy it myself, to be honest with you. And I like the way you're thinking. But unfortunately, it's probably not. But what you could possibly see is taking that idea and scaling it up at a community level, where maybe a group of people in a particular small town or village get together, you know, and maybe approach a solar company with a plan to take, you know, 10 or 20 or 100 acres. But it does require things like access to the grid. And certain farms, certain fields are close enough to the grid and to sort of high voltage connections to be able to do it. So it's not for everybody. And unfortunately, if you were doing that, what I would be suggesting is that you do it for yourself. So, like, right now, If anyone who's listened to us who doesn't have solar panels on their house, if they're lucky enough to have a house, for goodness sakes, do yourself a favour. It's the best money you will ever spend. And again, future you will thank you for it.
John Gibbons, I could chat to you for ages, and it's been incredible to have you on the final episode of 28 Ways to Save the World. And I just think there is a lot of food for thought there. And I think I'm gathering from what you say, we probably need to put pressure on the powers that be, because in an ideal world, I would be able to buy a field and put up solar panels and benefit from it and have my electric car running off it as well. But maybe we're a little bit away from that. But possibly, as you said, maybe that's something that we can create for the future.
I think we've got to keep an open mind on how we approach it. But the critical thing here is we've got to address our energy crisis. We've got to pivot rapidly away from fossil fuels. And we've also got to address our fast emerging food crisis in Ireland. We're incredibly vulnerable as a largely food importing nation. And that is something that our politicians in particular have really missed a trick on. Understanding our vulnerabilities there is the first step. Once we understand them, then we can go about putting in place the steps to secure a safer future for all of us.
Local, local, local. Buy local, support local, and be local. John Gibbons, as always, Gurmila Mila Magath.
Pleasure.
That's it for this episode, and for me, Megan Scully. Thank you to all our guests for joining us today. So, what are my main takeaways from this series? I guess it all goes down to simplicity. I've tried to make changes in my kitchen, cutting back on plastic and plastic use, in terms of shopping, making sure to always have my reusable shopping bag, and also with my fashion. Can I stop buying clothes that are made fully of polyester? Now, it's kind of difficult because a lot of clothes have it, but it's a case of using clothes I already own and just cutting back on my shopping and my fast fashion. Now, I love a good charity shop and I will continue to do so with that. In terms of travel, I am trying my best to use public transport as much as possible and adding more walking into my route. So instead of maybe driving in to work, I will use my steps and just walk on into the city. And I've noticed that I just feel so much better for it as well. So it's all the kind of little things that I'm doing that I've noticed are making a better impact in my own personal life. And therefore, I feel like if I'm doing good, then around me, it'll just feel that little bit better. So I think for me and for this series, for the last 28 weeks of 28 Ways to Save the World, it's the small little changes that will have the bigger impact. And I just notice overall, I'm more conscious of what I'm doing. I'm getting better at my food shopping, sourcing local, and just, I guess, making better and healthier decisions. And overall, I just feel better in myself. I feel happier, and I just feel like I'm making a small little change. So I think that's it for me. Just to say that we can all do small little steps each day into our life, and it will honestly have a bigger impact overall. The show is available as a podcast on Fridays on the Go Loud app or wherever you get your podcasts. The show is produced by Aidan McKelvey and researched by Micheál O'Connell. And I want to give a special mention to both of those who have been so incredible to work with the past few months. And also to my previous producer, Trish Laverty. Thank you all so much. The programme was funded by Commission Nimeon and the television licence fee. Well, that's it for 28 Ways to Save the World on News Talk. I have thoroughly enjoyed chatting to you each week. Slán!